welcome to One Inch Past Scary Podcast. This is Kirsty Sayer, and I hope you are doing well today. I'm coming to you from my gazebo in my backyard. It is a perfect 75 degree low humidity day in Ohio. I cannot bear to be inside on such a perfect day, and so I hope that you will enjoy the sound of my garden with the birds and the bees and the trees, and hopefully not too many neighbor and vehicle sounds. Let's see how this goes. So the theme of this week for me has been ADHD. And before I go further, I want to have a sort of disclaimer that's more for me and not for you. And it's probably unnecessary, but I'm sensitive and a little defensive about the idea that I kind of might be collecting acronyms or disorders or, you know, things to talk about. My podcast has been centered a lot around my journey of healing from complex PTSD. And I grew up in a home where mental health issues were kind of, there was a lot of eye rolling around the idea of therapy and taking care of mental health. And sort of this idea that Americans in particular were like mental health hypochondriacs. And so that actually kept me, you know, gaslighting myself for a long time. And it came from being in a family that was afraid to face its own issues. You know, it came from, you know, a lack of willingness to deal with trauma and, you know, all that stuff, which can be, you know, it takes courage to examine all that stuff. And so, you know, when that happens and you hear that a lot and it's kind of like, mental health issues are not only minimized but almost mocked, you gaslight yourself, and that, you know, obviously that stood in the way of me getting help for a really long time. And clearly I'm beyond that. I'm a huge proponent of therapy, and I went to a lot of therapy, and I'm, you know, that's what this podcast is mostly about, just about, you know, mental health and how to live a better, happier, more fulfilling life by, you know, addressing mental health issues. But I'm still slightly sort of self-conscious about the fact that, you know, I talk a lot about PTSD and what is it now? Now she's talking about ADHD. Like, what are the acronyms? And that really just does come from my background. And so, I guess as a disclaimer, I want to say, which is unnecessary. It really is. But it might be relevant to other people that PTSD and ADHD are very, very closely linked. So there's very, you know, there's a lot of clinical data to link the two, very commonly linked. But here's something more important to consider. I know, speaking for myself and pretty much everybody I know, having a diagnosis, which just happens to be, you know, named with an acronym, is not a label that I have sought out in order to cop out, in order to excuse behaviors that, you know, I don't want to take responsibility for, or sit and feel sorry for myself or whine about, or it'll just create a whole identity around. It's actually the very, very opposite. So for me, understanding what, you know, is going on with the chemicals in my brain, or because of, you know, past trauma, or just being neuroatypical and understanding that, and having you know, the ability to then research it and look for, you know, life hacks and treatments and people with perspectives that can be super helpful, is actually the opposite of you know, using it as an identity or a crutch. It's empowering because it allows me to overcome the difficulties of that a lot more effectively. And it also allows me to separate my identity from those things, which is exactly what I have been doing this whole time with not understanding or not seeking treatment for ADHD. The fact that I had and have had ADHD all my life and was, you know, diagnosed really, you know, within the last 10 years and haven't been adequately treated for at all, or done much research into it, or, you know, anything like that, has really affected my sense of identity in a very, very negative way. And it has really stood in the way of me, of my confidence, and of me pursuing things that I am capable of doing and want to do, the way I feel about myself, just my whole self-image has been very negatively affected by not understanding that this disorder does not equate to my identity, is not who I am. It's just something that I'm dealing with and that I could be dealing with more effectively if I understood it better. So I think that's, you know, the big misunderstanding, and it's such a tragic one, you know, like, oh, people, you know, this idea that, you know, that seems to be going away, you know, more and more, which is wonderful, but it really was very prevalent when I was growing up and, you know, throughout my adulthood, really, that people, you know, everybody is over-medicated and over-diagnosed, and these labels are everywhere, and everybody has to have a label, or six or seven of them, and they're a crutch, and they're, you know, and then people just kind of give up, and they, you know, they just have these identities, and it's just so toxic and everything. For me, it's the complete opposite. Getting a diagnosis of PTSD opened my life, empowered me, allowed me to heal, allowed me to realize that I was not my trauma, that I was not this, you know, injury to my brain, which is what PTSD does. It is a brain injury. I was separate from that. My identity was separate from that. That was incredibly empowering. That allowed me to take full responsibility for myself and, you know, do better in life. So it's sad that there is that stigma among so many people, and it's, and I guess, you know, that's why I said I shouldn't feel defensive, and it's sad that I did feel defensive in the need to, you know, sort of say, I know I seem like I adopt a lot of, like, acronyms. It's sad that I felt that way, but at the same time, I think this is a really valuable message that it's, these labels are not an identity. They are a tool for discovering your real identity outside of, you know, of these difficulties. Okay, so I'm going to start by telling you a recent experience that I've had, and which really got me thinking a lot about how I need to take the bull by the horns in dealing with the ADHD. And, you know, usually I would tell this story as is my shtick, which is kind of like, I am the ridiculous protagonist in the whole thing. And, you know, it's like a slapstick comedy where I own being the ridiculous disaster. And that has been a protective mechanism for me. I have almost made a career of making people laugh at my mishaps and my struggles. And there's nothing wrong with that. I think like any comedian is really, that's kind of like how it goes, you know? There's nothing wrong and everything right with not taking yourself too seriously and being able to laugh at yourself, but to laugh at yourself fondly and endearingly and lovingly is very different from making yourself the butt of the joke and being ridiculous and doing that as a protective mechanism, which I realized after the experience that I had this week when talking to my brother Seth, who's so amazing, and you may have listened to podcasts with him in the past, and I always want him back on this because he's so insightful and so brilliant. Sorry about the train siren in the background. But he helped me to realize that, you know, seeing yourself as ridiculous is actually really harmful. And for me, it was like, well, there was way worse things I could be than ridiculous. And his pushback was, well, but there's way better things you could be than ridiculous also. Like, why would you make yourself ridiculous? Why would you assume that you are ridiculous? I don't see you as ridiculous. Like, this is disrespectful to yourself. Okay, I'm going to take a break because this train siren is actually really distracting me, and maybe you too, especially if you have ADHD. So let's pause here and I'll be right back. And we're back. So my brother was telling me how, you know, you may think that calling yourself and seeing yourself ridiculous is not the worst thing that you could be, because I would be like, well, I could be mean or cruel or evil or whatever, you know, so ridiculous. He's like, but why do you need to be something negative? Like, ridiculous isn't a good thing to be. You aren't ridiculous in my eyes. Why are you assuming this? Do you like to be ridiculous? And I was like, no. And I realized it was all, you know, this has been a major protective mechanism. If I cannot function well in the world, at least I will be funny, entertain people with the many mishaps of my life, and laugh at myself before other people can laugh at me. And you know, this has backfired in a lot of ways. So let me tell you the story so that you can see how. Because there's just so much to cover, and my mind is now wandering. I'm going back in time regarding how this has developed and how I find myself in this situation. But let's sort of consolidate it all by telling you the recent experience I had. So last week, I went to a pottery class with my friend Corey, and she suggested this pottery class. This is Corey. If you follow my Instagram, this is Corey of Kirsty and Corey Do All the Things. I have a little series, a little hashtag of that. We started to do a bunch of different things to kind of make living in Bowling Green, Ohio, a little less sad, especially during the winter. And then COVID put a stop to that. So we're trying to re-enter into society and doing some things to make our lives slightly more dynamic. And she suggested a pottery class. And I've always wanted to do pottery, but I don't know anything past, you know, what I saw on the movie Ghost. You know, it's like, oh, that looks fun and therapeutic. And there's, you know, I'm very tactile. I love playing with Play-Doh. So I'm like, that sounds amazing. And what a good way to re-enter society. You don't have to make a ton of small talk. You're just kind of hanging out with people, but you're in your own space doing your own thing and like relaxing and creative. Perfect. And I thought, I signed up for the class and didn't think anything beyond that. Not a lot of people, when they are dealing with a new endeavor or like, you know, jumping into that, go on YouTube and research. That's totally not me. It's not what I do. I just like sign up and then roll up. So that is what I did. And we were slightly late because I had made us slightly late by not being able to find my checkbook before we left, because who's using checkbooks anymore? And for some reason, I thought that we had to pay with check for some reason. There's no reason why, but so we were just like a minute or two late. But already I have this negative self-talk, like here we are walking in, like while everybody else is getting settled. We're the last two here. It's my fault. I'm feeling bad about myself immediately, like insecure about that. And so we sit down and I'm trying to, you know, catch my breath and sort of regroup and recenter. Everybody seems friendly. It seems the vibe is chill. Everybody is like, you know, just sitting there casually. It's not, you know, doesn't feel intimidating. It seems friendly. Teacher's chill. And so, you know, I'm starting to like, you know, just come down off of that initial shame of being late. You're always late. You're always flustered. You never can, you know, all this negative self-talk that I just do without even realizing I do. So I'm starting to just like come down off of that and really start to focus on what the teacher is saying. And she says, okay, everybody like, you know, start your wheel, like experiment with how the wheel feels. So I turn on the wheel doesn't start for me. And she's like, oh, that's right. You're at the glitchy wheel. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Just watch me. And then when I'm done demonstrating, I will let you have my wheel. So if those of you out there have never dealt with something like ADHD or listening, and this would like be, okay, cool, that sounds like good. But this is what goes on in my brain. Oh my hell. Oh my God. Typical that I would sit at the glitchy wheel. It's just so typical. And that's because I'm late. And okay, like what did she just say? Focus, Christy, focus what she's saying. Oh my God. Like I need to be hands-on. I need to be practicing while she's saying it. That's my learning style. I can't like just take it in. I can't just take in these verbal cues. Like I need to be, this is like, I'm already behind. Christy, focus on what she's saying. Just relax, take a deep breath, focus on what she's saying. Like if I hadn't been late, I wouldn't have sat next to the glitchy wheel. And now I'm going to have to move and sit like away from Corey, which sucks. It's like freaking typical. This always happens. And it's always because I make us late and like always get the raw end of the deal. Oh my God. Like why? Christy, focus. You're not hearing what she's saying and you're getting behind. Oh my God. I'm getting behind. This always happens to me. Okay. Just relax and calm down. You can always ask her to clarify. Okay. You know, why, what if she forgets that my wheel is glitchy and I'm going to have to tell her like, can I please go on your wheel? And like, it's going to be so weird and awkward. I'm like, Chris, you're grown up. Like, it's just fine. You have, all you have to say is like, okay, we need to switch wheels now. You're a confident grown up woman. Like, that's all you have to do. Just focus, take deep breaths and focus on what she's saying. But I can't focus. I need to be doing it with my hands. Oh my gosh, this is so unfair. This is so messed up. This is so typical. This is so my fault. Why can't I just be freaking normal? Why am I such a fucking mess? Okay, so that's what's going on. This is the beginning of my new, wonderful, therapeutic, creative experience. This is what's going on in my mind, right? All of that. Negative self-talk. Now, who is going to be like open and able to understand an entirely new skill? And a really challenging one at that, by the way, that I was soon to find out. Another thing was, is that it turns out I was actually the only person there that was truly a novice, like a total pottery virgin. Like I had no idea. Everybody else had some exposure and knew at least sort of the direction that they needed to be going in. Some had had several classes, some, you know, had been on the wheel plenty of times before. I was the only one who was like fully a novice. In addition to that, the instructor was sort of like wonderful and chill and kind, but she had this, her style was just to do and demonstrate by doing. And because I know myself and I know ADHD, I believe that she is a fellow, she's in that team. She's on that team too, because she would sort of like start to help me with something and then she would wander off. She'd be distracted by a text. or she'd be distracted by, you know, somebody walking in or something else and sort of wander off. And I just needed some focused attention, literal hands-on, when we did start getting going. And so we were not a great combination in terms of this particular situation. And everybody else was singing our praises. Oh my gosh, you know, this was the best. This is so good. This is the best I've ever done. So much better than, you know, my past classes. And so everybody else is having this great experience. So of course I'm internalizing it rather than going, okay, I'm ADHD and this is a distracted instructor who's not teaching in the way that is beneficial to me. It's beneficial to everybody else. But that doesn't mean that there's anything, you know, wrong or wicked or terrible about me. It's just, it's not a great fit right now. Plus I'm at a disadvantage because I sat at the wrong wheel and sort of am like, at least, you know, I'm the whole introduction behind because I was so flustered and unable to sort of absorb everything. And, you know, I'm not taking any of this into account. I'm just getting more and more frustrated and self-loathing and flustered. And in addition, I just have to say, in addition, then comes this whole, you're ridiculous. You're just ridiculous. Because I was, you know, I could just picture how I looked. And, it, you know, it is confirmed by my friend Corey that I was quite the sight. because I had been struggling with like some, I had eczema on my hand from overuse over the pandemic of antibacterial gel. At the beginning, I really did, you know, stop using that when I found out that we didn't need to, but it had caused some, you know, this horrible eczema. I was having a terrible flare of it and it couldn't be exposed to anything, like not air, not water, nothing. It was so irritated, so itchy and painful and everything. So I had it covered up with Band-Aids, but like, obviously they're not going to stay on with a bunch of clay and water. So I, at the last minute before I ran out of the house, I grabbed like a surgical glove, but it was bright blue. So I'm not striking a subtle or not odd figure right there, because here I am, I'm in this really bright yellow bohemian dress. It's a super humid day. My hair is all on end. I'm so flustered. I've got my bright blue surgical glove, a very bizarre Michael Jackson situation going on. I am just a mess, right? And I'm acutely aware of that. And I'm not able to laugh it off this time. For some reason, I'm just not able to laugh it off. And due to, you know, circumstances that aren't my fault, I'm having a really rough start. So, you know, something that the instructor said sort of in passing was, you know, there's a plate that goes on the pottery wheel and it was already there when we all started. And I, in my flustering, I didn't realize, you know, you have to put a plate on the wheel because the wheel looks like it has a plate on already. And so it's not just like sort of like a, you know, a groove, like a blender or something that you can clearly see something needs to go there. It does look, you know, it looks complete unless you don't know that. And so when she did move from the wheel, she took her plate with her and I forgot or had phased out the need to put my own plate there. So I put my clay on there and things just went crazy. The piece of clay just flew off across the room. Not once, not twice, but like three times. And suddenly I just snapped. I'm like, fuck this. I am done. I am done with always being the ridiculous person in the room. I'm angry. I'm not going to laugh at myself. I'm not in the mood to laugh at this. This is just pissing me right off. This is not the experience I signed up for. This is not the experience I'm paying for. I was mad at everyone and everything. I looked over at my friend Corey. She was just this willowy goddess of pottery. I mean, she was like this. I later said to her, I feel like such a bad friend because I should have grabbed my phone and taken a photo of you. You looked so exquisite. She's like framed in this bay window with the sunlight streaming in and she is just wearing this chic, effortless outfit and she is so willowy and beautiful and graceful, graceful, graceful. She's a yoga teacher and she's just, you know, she's got that whole like serene, beautiful, graceful vibe. And she has done pottery before, and she's just calm and chill, and she's just beautiful. I mean, she looks like something straight out of like your most exquisite pottery fantasy. This girl just looked. And here I am with my ripped blue glove, my crazy, like, loud outfit, which I don't mind usually, but, like, you don't want to be looking loud when you are acting loud and it's not intentional. At least that's what I was acutely aware of. And I'm just, like, I'm like, the contrast between us is so ridiculous right now. And she's like, are you having fun? I'm like, no, I'm not having fun. I'm like hissing at her. We're sitting at, you know, like sitting there trying to get the bubbles out of our clay, whatever that's called, wedging at the bench. And I'm just pissed off. And you can see she's so taken aback. Like, oh my God, this chick is pissed. Like, and she's just like, it's just clay. And I'm like, I know it's just clay. But to me, she doesn't realize what's going on in my mind. This is not just clay. This is a lifetime of freaking frustration, self-loathing, and just struggle that has come to a head, and I am fucking done. And I'm sorry, you know, for the swearing, but I just feel like I have to be fully authentic in my frustration, because it was, you know, I do swear a lot, and I was just so cell deep done, just done. And I'm like, I'm done laughing at myself. I'm done making myself the butt of the joke. I'm just done. And usually that irritation and that irritability, that is really, you know, people with ADHD or people who understand ADHD know that people with it have a really kind of low, often have a really low tolerance for frustration. And it's not because, my theory anyway, and I really haven't done enough research to be definitive, but my theory, and speaking for myself, it's not because we can't deal with frustration. I deal with frustration all day, every day, and I think that I'm pretty patient with it, actually. It's that we have dealt with so much of it, and it has ended up poorly. And when things start to go badly for us, we are literally triggered. We're remembering all the other times where things ended up being so disastrous and so embarrassing and so stressful that the minute we start to get frustrated by something, you know, after all of that, we start to build up, you know, this intolerance for frustration. It's not because we don't have a capacity for frustration. It's because we are triggered by all the things that frustration comes with. So, you know, neurotypical people living in a neurotypical world do not deal with the same amount of frustration. And so when they do encounter difficulties and challenges, they're not triggered, because typically they'll put their heads down, they'll work at it, they'll solve it, and they'll experience the reward of that. But people who are not neurotypical often struggle and struggle and struggle 10 times, 100 times more than a neurotypical person, and they do not have a good outcome. And you know, they're frustrated, they're humiliated, they're embarrassed, they're self-conscious. And at the end of it all, there is not a great outcome. Often you just end up doing very, very poorly in school or in a test or in an activity. You know, I work 10 times harder at doing basic household tasks than my husband does. And he is 10 times more efficient. Like, I will watch him do basic things like putting away the laundry, and it's effortless for him, and he's so efficient, and he does it, and it's no big deal. And when I do it, it takes genuinely 10 times longer. I don't have the same good outcome. Half the things are like still left out or in the wrong spot. It's just like, it's very discouraging and deeply frustrating. And it's not something that I ever truly acknowledged before. That is how it became my identity. I'm just an ineffective, inefficient, undisciplined, lazy, dumb, slow person, messy, all the things. And you know, these things were reinforced in my childhood. These labels: Kirsty doesn't finish anything, Kirsty's so messy, she spreads her stuff everywhere, Kirsty's this, Kirsty's lazy. That was the ongoing narrative. She's just so lazy. And, you know, I realize now that that was projection, not understanding stuff. I was an academically low achiever. Looking back, there's every reason to understand why, even though I was intelligent. And I think that's the problem, is that, you know, my parents and my teachers could tell that I was bright. They could tell that I had the potential to, you know, that I wasn't dumb. I wasn't slow, but academically I did very poorly, and they assumed it was because I was lazy. And it wasn't. I mean, I categorically wasn't. You know, I tried really, really hard a lot of the time, and then there would be other times I was just paralyzed. And of course, I was being abused, you know, throughout my childhood, which was very distracting, exhausting, and traumatic. I mean, that's going to use up a ton of bandwidth. The stress of that and the processing of that and the fear of that, you know, literally just trying to freaking survive in a world keeping that secret was taking up so much bandwidth. And, you know, PTSD does lead to ADHD, or vice versa. Often, sometimes people have ADHD and PTSD results because of it. And I think that's, you know, my theory is that that is why ADHD people just present as being having a low tolerance for frustration. It's not that they do. They are just triggered by so many terrible experiences, embarrassing, self-loathing experiences. And so when I came home and, you know, told my brother about this and, you know, described myself as being ridiculous, he was like, "Why would you say this about yourself? Stop saying such a mean thing about yourself." And I was like, "Really? Ridiculous is mean?" Like, to me, that was the kindest, like, that was my escape. That was my protective mechanism. Okay, so you won't be lazy or messy. You won't be lazy or dumb or unmotivated. You'll just be ridiculous. Like, ridiculous things happen to you and you respond in ridiculously hilarious ways. And then you tell the story or you play it up so that everybody can laugh with you, not at you. You know, and this is kind of what I realized that I've been doing my whole life. But underneath it all was a great deal of pain and self-loathing. And in doing that, you set other people up to make you the butt of the joke. They think that you like that. They think that you're down with it. And the more that they do that and you laugh at it, the more you reinforce it. And the more they reinforce it for you. And it's very harmless a good deal of the time. But it's so harmful in the end because it is such a reinforcing and damaging thing. And I honestly did not realize how damaging that was until my brother pointed it out. And just how rooted it was in past trauma and how important it is that I get to understand ADHD and how hard it has been to function and how well I have functioned, how much better and how much more credit I need to give myself for what I have accomplished despite having undiagnosed and untreated ADHD for most of my life. And now that I understand it, when I am triggered by anger and frustration, I realize like what it is. It's like you're not an angry person who has no tolerance for frustration. You're being triggered right now by all the times that you just felt so helpless and so completely overwhelmed and judged and you know, all of those things, because you were dealing with a ton in a neurotypical and demanding world. And to have five kids, four of them really close together, is the perfect storm for ADHD, because you are being pulled in 25,000 different directions at all times. And even when it's quiet at night, you're thinking about those kids and all their different needs. And then to have PTSD on top of it, and to have that, you know, running in the background of your brain constantly, how I ever managed to focus enough to get a degree, to keep all those kids alive, you know, to keep my house out of abject squalor, to accomplish what I have done. When I consider it in that context, I'm like, wow, I am quite amazing. But I have spent my entire life telling myself that I'm lame and an underachiever and stuff, because I would watch my neurotypical friends and family accomplish things with so much ease and so much grace and not even think about it. I just remember just a couple of years ago, I went to run a marathon and stay with my friend Jen, who's also been on the podcast and is just the most delightful, wonderful human. And if she had to know, well, you know, actually this wasn't a negative experience. It was just, I was mesmerized. I was watching her just, you know, we came home and she just put together a snack for her kids. And now I have been a mom for almost 23 years now. And so I have had to do a lot of making snacks. And it has always been so hard and so overwhelming. And, you know, forget about making meals. Erin does almost all the cooking. There was, you know, a period in our lives on and off where I tried to take up that mantle and, you know, did okay at it for a while when I was really committed to it. But he does all the cooking in our house because it is such an overwhelming task for me. So making simple snacks and lunches for kids was so overwhelming and such a messy and just stuff like that that people don't understand is hectic, especially when kids are pulling on you and asking you for different things. And I know this sounds, you know, if you're neurotypical, you're like, this woman is literally trying to make me feel sorry for herself because she was making snacks for her kids. No, not at all. It was just that I realized how hard it was for me compared to somebody who doesn't struggle with ADHD when I watched my friend Jen just take a bunch of leftovers out of the fridge and gracefully and without thought just create this beautiful spread for her children. And it was just such a non-issue. You could see it took no effort. She was so calm. It was so mesmerizing and therapeutic to watch. It was just like, I didn't have envy. I was just in awe. I was like, imagine, like she just created this meal out of stuff in her fridge without it creating a massive mess. She just focused on one thing and then another thing and another thing. And she created these beautiful little, like this little spread. It was just the simple, beautiful everyday task that I had been struggling with for 21 years. Every day, I've been doing it, but with so much more effort. And, you know, that kind of thing. When I think about just how every single task was so hard and remains so hard, you know, just getting myself ready or getting myself out of the door every day is such an ordeal. It's a really big deal. I almost always have to come back to the house 2 or 3 times. And, you know, I'm learning not to have self-loathing around that, but, and I, you know, I'm starting to try, you know, I'm researching the hacks and I'm getting medicated again and experimenting with, you know, getting the right dosage, which is really quite complicated. And all that kind of thing, you know, having this diagnosis now and having this fresh perspective and my brother saying, making yourself ridiculous is incredibly harmful and is rooted in this and this and this, and you've got to stop that, has really kind of opened my eyes to the fact that there is help out there, and I am intent on understanding this and working with it so that I can regain my confidence and I can give myself the acknowledgement and the love and the acceptance that I deserve. And not invite other people to make fun of me, even in a good-humored way, because it doesn't feel good. I don't need to have that protective mechanism. I don't need to invite other people to make me ridiculous, because I'm not ridiculous. Ridiculous things do happen to me, and I am happy to laugh at them with people, but when it's truly with people and not at myself. And they might be laughing with me, but I am hurting, and you know, there's so much that I need to reframe in my mind. And just, you know, since discovering this, I've checked out just a couple of podcasts and have learned so much about, you know, what you can do to help. There's types of yoga, there's types of movement, there's music, there's understanding different things that go hand in hand with ADHD. You know, there's something called, now I've forgotten, it's another acronym, but it's something sensitivity dysphoria. And it's about being extremely sensitive to criticism. And, you know, that's something worth looking into, and something that can explain a lot of, you know, the people that I also interact with in my life, helping myself, helping others that I know. And so, you know, just this, having this diagnosis and recognizing that not treating it and not taking it seriously is actually so harmful and taking such a toll and holding me back from the self-acceptance that I really, you know, am craving. And I have gone so far on that road. I have really learned to love myself so much better and accept myself and work with myself and be so much kinder to myself in my journey with PTSD. But I realized that this was a big piece that was holding me back. And it's really interesting how, you know, these things become revealed once you sort of do the base layers, the major trauma. You know, dealing with PTSD was sort of the hemorrhage, and now we're dealing with the chronic conditions. And I feel really lucky to be living in the time that we are in, where you have so much free access to so much quality information and, you know, fascinating podcasts that make this kind of information so accessible. Awesome TikToks. You know, there are awesome people on TikTok who are teaching people how to function with ADHD and love themselves and accept themselves and recognize that they aren't neurotypical and they are living in a neurotypical world, and their best is good enough. It's more than good enough, and it doesn't have to look like anybody else's best. I mean, there's just so much fantastic information out there. So while social media has its ills, as we all know, you know, and we've been decrying those ills so much lately, it has so many wonderful things too. And I, at this moment, feel so freaking grateful for the access that I have to just endless amounts of information and resources, which are free, as well as, you know, a doctor that is committed to working with me, you know, in terms of medicating me and stuff. I've, you know, when I initially suspected I had ADHD and got a diagnosis, I really struggled to find a doctor who was willing to medicate me, because the initial doctor I went to had no concept of what ADHD meant. And he looked and he was like, well, you got a 4.0 in college, so you don't have ADHD. I don't believe you do. And I think he thought I was like drug seeking. You know, he thought that I wanted stimulants. And it was just, oh my gosh, that was so undermining, so triggering, so distressing. And then I was lucky enough to find another doctor who did take me seriously. But at that time, I had unresolved PTSD. And the reason why I was seeking out help for ADHD was because I was doing my master's in mental health counseling. And so I had this unresolved PTSD from childhood sexual abuse. And I was getting a master's while I had 5 kids, one of whom was 2 years old, a really demanding lifestyle, you know, by any standards. And I had unresolved PTSD. And there I am doing a mental health master's where I'm doing, you know, I'm reading case studies all day about kids who have been sexually abused and being intensely triggered. And I have been given stimulants at the same time. And so I just, oh my gosh, I spiraled so hard to the point that I actually had to stop my program. And that was basic, you know, one of the things that led me to getting help for PTSD. But I started to associate taking ADHD medicine with massive amounts of anxiety and depression. And so I just avoided medication then for years and years and years after. And I was just like, forget that. And then after I was treated for PTSD, I was like, oh, I never had ADHD at all. I had PTSD. That's what it was. Okay, phew, no worries. And then when I started to re-enter the world after dealing with PTSD and wanting to function again in a mainstream way and not the survival way that I had been dealing with, that I had been functioning when I had PTSD, just kind of taking it really easy and healing and focusing only on PTSD. And I wanted to start doing normal life things again. It took a long time for me to acknowledge and accept that I do have, as I was diagnosed with, severe ADHD. And it was in addition to PTSD, probably caused by PTSD, but regardless, I do still have it and it needed to be addressed. And I recently got back on medication and was interested to discover that the medications worked the way they were supposed to, now that I wasn't in the throes of constant triggering from PTSD. The stimulants didn't make me panicky and strung out. They actually did their job and made me calmer and focused. I think of when I'm properly medicated, and I'm still actually really trying to tweak that. I don't think I am properly medicated yet. I'm working on it. But those pictures where you those bird eye views of those highways, those overhead photos of those highways where they have like 16 different highways. You know what? I don't even know what they're called because I don't drive on highways. That's something else to discuss on a whole nother day. But my brain feels like that most of the time with all the cars rushing back and forth and accidents on all of those highways. And it makes it into like a 4-lane highway instead, which is, I would prefer it was a single lane road, a nice, calm country road, but a 4-lane highway is infinitely more manageable. So, I've had to accept, okay, you do still have ADHD, and wow, the stimulants work when you're not, dealing with acute PTSD. So that's great. But now I need to understand it better, and I need to, find coping skills and learn more about it so that I can really disconnect this very harmful identity that I have that I've got all woven up in ADHD from my true identity. And I'm really excited to do that. I found my journey understanding PTSD and working through it to be incredibly liberating in terms of I am not my trauma. I am not my trauma, and it is not a crutch, and it is not something that I've used to cop out of life. It is something that I've used to take full responsibility for my life and my recovery. And I intend to do the same with ADHD. I've had that diagnosis for almost 10 years now. But now I'm really ready to take responsibility for it and to work with it as much as possible. And I do wish that ADHD wasn't called a disorder. It's only a disorder in a context of a society that requires people to think in a certain way to be in a certain way to be considered high achieving. And in lots of ways, ADHD is a great superpower. A lot of, professions have high, attract high levels. A lot of people with ADHD, like emergency room doctors, who we really need. And, when they get that under control, it makes them extremely effective under those circumstances. And so I do think, I hate that it's called a disorder because it's just a difference. It's hard to function in a society that doesn't celebrate those differences and requires a lot of what is the word? Conformity. Anyway, but I'm excited to, you know, to learn more and to share more, and hopefully to help others, and then to just truly extricate who I am from that, and to, you know, go that one step further with self-acceptance and self-love, and the reason why that's so important to me, apart from the fact that every human being deserves to love and accept themselves, is because I think, you know, it's so important for our kids. If our kids see that their mom doesn't love and accept herself, no matter how much we tell them that they should love and accept themselves, what are we modeling? And also just how we sort of present in the world. You can truly only love others as much as you love yourself. And I find that when I'm struggling, I'm really critical of the world at large. When I'm at peace with myself, I'm a lot more open, I'm a lot more accepting, I'm a lot more curious as to other people's experiences, a lot less judgmental, a lot less unkind. And that's how I want to show up in the world, ultimately. I want to be that person. I don't want to be unkind. I don't want to be judgmental. I don't think it's really valuable. I want to be curious. I want to understand other people's point of view, because I think that's the most effective means of changing things that might be wrong. And so, yeah, this, you know, self-acceptance is important to me, and understanding as much as we can about ourselves and what we're dealing with, I really think is a huge key towards that. So thank you so much for tuning in today and listening to this ramble. I hope that something in it was helpful, resonated for you, might resonate for you in helping somebody that you know. Maybe just helps you to understand the experience of ADHD people in general, and how somebody who might appear to be very confident and happy and whatever, how, you know, what's going on there in a dialogue can be really damaging and distracting and sad. So, yeah, I've tried to be as vulnerable as possible with this, and I hope that's helpful. I really do think that, you know, the more we can be honest about our experiences, the more we can learn from each other and just get better as a society. So I really appreciate you tuning in. If you want to share this with anybody, please feel free. If you want to like and rate this podcast, I would appreciate it. More people get to hear it that way. Like Glennon Doyle says, always at the beginning or end of her new podcast, which is outstanding, by the way. Only review it if you have a good review. Otherwise, don't worry about it. It's fine. So, and I stand by that. But if you want to privately, if you have private like questions or concerns or, you know, any kind of pushback, I certainly welcome hearing you and listening. You can always contact me at kirsty.sayer@gmail.com or via Instagram. I'm Momity Kirsty on Instagram, or Facebook, Kirsty Sayer on Facebook. I have a public Facebook page, so you can always message me there. But I really appreciate you tuning in. And even if you don't share this podcast, just if there's a nugget that, you know, that resonates, that you think would be helpful for someone else, pass it on. Let's try to help each other. And I will talk to you soon. Take care.